Assalamualaikum, Samia. I've known you for such a long time, and I am so happy to have you here on my podcast. I know everything about you, but please tell us a little bit about you. What do you do? Who you are? And what are we going to talk about today?
Sure. Welcome, Salam Sam. It's so good to see you. I mean, I think it's been, how long have you known? Like almost a decade now, or it'll
Oh my
be a
God!
decade. Yeah, it's
Don't
crazy.
say
Okay. Yeah, no, we're hiding that fact.
that. Yes.
So I'm a rheumatologist. So I'm a physician. And we met actually when we were doing residency back in Richmond many, many years ago. And in the last few years, I would say probably around 2019, 2020, I actually started becoming a travel advisor, which is for most people, travel advisors, like kind of term that people now use to talk about travel agents. And my interest in that kind of started just because I personally like love travel. That's my thing. That's what gives me joy. And I discovered that really in med school and residency, because we'd have like no time, right? And when you're going through those worst rotations, the only thing that would get me through it is just dreaming of a trip or planning a trip or reading about someone else's trip to be like, ah, inshallah, one day I'm going to do this. And then I'd be like, okay, maybe we'll go in 6 months. And I would spend the next 6 months just in my brain, like creating these like itineraries and like, oh, we'll do this, we'll do that. And that would just like be my survival thing. And I think everyone gets joy. And that's like the most important thing, right? Finding something that gives you joy and gives you that sense of happiness to just get you through hard times and also just like gives you light. And so for me, travel was my biggest thing. And like, you know, people have different things that like give them joy. And today we're going to actually talk about travel, but in a different term, traveling on points, which is not something that is always discussed or it's very niche. Not everyone talks about it, but it's something that I've been like interested in the last 2 or 3 years. And really in the past year have become a little more interested where, you know, I've learned more about it and I've become better at, you know, not only accumulating points, but being more looking at my travels and seeing, hey, how can I incorporate using credit card points to elevate my own personal travels with my family or just solo travel? So we're going to talk about credit cards today.
Yay. I also had a question about a travel agent or travel advisor. What is it, and how can we utilize it? And are there any costs associated with it? Let's say I want to book a trip to Bermuda, wherever. Is it better to do it on my own? I can go to they have all these, there's like millions of websites now,
Yeah, no, I mean, so not everyone uses a travel advisor or travel agent, and not everyone should or needs to for every trip. I think it's definitely good to use one if you're going somewhere you've never been, or if you're going on a like I think the best time to use it is for something that's really a new thing for you and you just want advice and you need someone to help you decide what to do and what not to do and to give you the best of their professional opinion. There is no cost to you. Usually, the way travel advisors work is that they're part of some sort of agency. And depending on what bookings you're wanting them to do, they're going to get commissions from whatever resort or cruise that you're going on. So if you're booking something, prices are usually set at a certain cost, right? And in most of those prices for major resorts or cruise lines, that there's a fee that goes to travel advisors, whether you use one or not. So regardless, you're already paying it. When you don't use a travel advisor, that little fee or cost, and it's not a lot, like people don't make $1 million off your booking. That small fee goes back to the vendor. So if you use a travel advisor, the company that you're booking will pay your travel advisor at some point. And usually it's not right then. It's usually a few months after you've actually traveled, they'll get that amount. The benefits of using a travel advisor is sometimes, especially if you're trying to curate relationship with your clients, travel advisors will share that commission with you. So then you might get like a cruise credit or a resort credit or get some sort of discount. But the main reason to use one is like when I work with my clients, I'm 24/7 with them. Like, for example, especially with Disney cruises, like when people are going on their first cruise or even their fourth cruise, if they have a question, they can message me, they can talk to me. If you book it through Expedia, if you book it through even Costco, if you book it through all of these other places, you may get a better deal because sometimes they might have a bigger discount. They're bigger companies, right? So they might give you a little bit more. But if you're like stuck somewhere, who are you going to call? What are you going to do? So it really comes down to if you really, especially if it's a really important trip or something that's a milestone, you want that extra person that you can message and be like, hey, can you take care of this for me? Can you look into this? I don't have time to make a million phone calls. And that's why you'd want to use a travel advisor.
Yeah. And you've traveled, mashallah. And especially as a mom, I'm fascinated with your travels because you've done it with your kids when they were so small, especially Iceland.
I was so amazed at that. Iceland was crazy amazing though. Yeah, no. So I think everyone travels differently and every family, like everyone has different comfort zones. And for us, like, you know, at least for me personally, I believe like for my kids is I want to expose them to the world as much as I can while they're mine and be able to have those experiences with them. And when you start at a really young age, the benefit is it's a struggle. It's never a vacation. I don't consider Iceland a vacation. Iceland was a family trip, right? Because you are just parenting in a different location. But it's like when you start at a young age, they get accustomed and they feel that it's normal to be in a car for several hours, or they think it's normal to go on a plane. They think it's normal to wait in line. So as they get older, our trips have become less tiring in the sense of, well, they're still tiring, but less difficult because our kids are not shocked by it because they're kind of used to it. But Iceland was a very amazing trip. We did almost 10 days or 12 days. It's called the Ring Tour, where you go to Iceland and Iceland is an island and you can drive on one road that goes to the circles, the entire island. And we just literally stopped at different locations along the way, pretty much seeing all of Iceland or as much as Iceland as we could. And for my kids, it was great because before we went on the trip, we bought books on Iceland and we did story time and we learned about different places and different animals you can see. So my other two were very excited and already made a list of things they wanted to see. And I think that's a big part of travel is when we go places, especially like, you know, different countries or different historical places, we like to teach the kids beforehand or expose them to this is what you're going to learn about, or this is what you're going to see, so that they're already interested. So when they're there, for them, it's a deeper level of interaction than, oh, we're just here.
Yeah. That was actually a really good mind switch for me to look at it as a family trip and not as a vacation, because I'm always annoyed. I'm like, this is not a vacation. This is not time off.
Yeah, no, it's not. So, you know, one thing I've switched, I used to do a lot of Airbnbs because we have a lot, we have four kids. So it's really hard to do hotels when you have like more than two kids, right? But I realized that I don't like Airbnb. I mean, they're functional and sometimes you have to do it. I realized that a lot of times when we were going on family vacations, when we ended up going to like a house, I would end up like trying to figure out food and like cooking. And I'm like, what? I'm doing the same things I do at home. This is not fun. This is not relaxing. So I've kind of realized like, okay, there are certain trips where I just want to not do anything. I need to like be taken care of. And you have to, there's a mix of that. You have to have the right expectations before every trip. Like you have to know, like when we go to Disney World, my expectation is no relaxation. My expectation is my feet are going to hurt. I'm going to get up really early. I'm going to be up really late. I'm going to be running around. My expectation when I go to an all-inclusive is I'm doing nothing and I'm just sitting there and being served. So you just got to like have the right expectations for every type of trip.
Yeah. Thank you. So coming back to points, so I guess we get points through credit cards. So when it comes to credit cards, there's like two major areas that I'm going to look at. One is through Islamic, like as Muslims, are we allowed to have credit cards? That's a big question. And then the second is from finance perspective. All these big finance gurus like Dave Ramsey, they're always preaching that you shouldn't have credit cards, right? Cut that plastic down. That's like his big slogan. So from these two perspectives, are credit cards worth it or okay to have?
So I'm not a scholar. So what I'm saying, obviously, you should do your own research and look into it and ask people you trust. From my own personal research, I actually was very anti-credit cards for a very long time. The only credit card that I had was a Bank of America MasterCard that gave me a really good cash back. And I thought that was the greatest thing in the world. And I thought I was so smart because I was getting cash back. Credit cards are not allowed in Islam if you are not going to be able to pay off the statement within the time allotted. Because what ends up happening with a lot of these major credit card companies like Chase and Amex, if you look at the fine print, if you don't pay the bill on time, the interest rate is 22% to 28%, depending on which card you get. That's really high. So I do not advise anybody getting multiple credit cards if you're already in debt. If you already have credit card debt and you're trying to pay it off, miles and points are meaningless. Stay away from it. It's not worth it. Cut that plastic. I agree. Credit cards are really hard for people who do have trouble handling their finances, because when you have that plastic and you use it, it's not real money. Like you don't see that money. So the perspective is if you're using a credit card to make purchases, sometimes in some people, when they have that behavior of excessive spending, they're not able to know how much they're spending and they forget and they overspend and they lose that budgeting. So I don't think credit cards are a good idea for people who are already struggling with their finances. Miles and points are for a niche group of people who are financially stable, are not in debt, are able to pay down their monthly bills without an issue, and have high expenses. Because then what credit cards become is a leverage, right? And that's the niche that we're looking at. Traveling on points is not for everyone, and not everyone should try to do it. If you're struggling financially, your goal should be is to get your finances in stable form, do all the things that you recommend to do to kind of have proper budgeting, know what's good and what's, you know, what to avoid. And credit cards are evil in the sense that they do prey on people who are not able to pay their monthly. And that creates the problem because then you have people going in debt and then you have people, you know, really struggling and having to, you know, be stuck in moving their money from one credit card to the other to be able to pay everything down. And that's definitely not what we're trying to do or advocate at all. So if you're going to be going into credit cards at all or looking into credit cards for point earning and travel, you have to do it if you are someone who's able to financially afford it, be able to pay everything down, already have a very stable income, and you're not in any way like having issues with your finances. So Islamically, you probably would not be allowed to have a credit card if you believe interest is not allowed in Islam, then you wouldn't allow those credit cards to accrue interest. Because even if you have a debit or you have a regular credit card that is cashback and not point earning, if you're utilizing the banks are already playing with interest. So it's not like you're already in that, unless you're someone who's like, I'm not doing any banking and I have money under my mattress. We're all involved in the banking system. It's just minimizing our own personal decisions and exposures to interest.
Yeah. And that's how I looked at it. So I am completely new to the points game and it's all because of you. So this is a completely new language to me and you're going to have to tell us everything. But before that, yes, I was doing Fidelity and it was cashback paying off at the end of each month. And then the money that I was, the cashback was, it was getting invested into my brokerage account through Fidelity. So I loved that option. But points is a whole new different game. So what is points?
So not every credit card, like you said, gives you points. So there's certain cards. And so there's three or four main banking cards that we look at. Chase is a big one. Chase has many credit cards that earn points. American Express, Venture, Capital One has Venture, which is another point earning. You have Citibank, and then you have co-branded cards from different airlines or different hotel brands, but that's a little deeper. So the main two cards that we want to talk about is Chase and American Express because they're the most commonly used. So when you have a credit card and you spend it, so for example, let's start with Chase Sapphire Preferred Card. If you get that card right now, depending on what the deal is, you can get a certain amount of sign-up bonus after you do a minimum spend of something. So for example, let's just say the credit card company is running a promotion that says you spend $4,000, you're going to get 80,000 points and you spend the $4,000 in 3 months. This isn't accurate. I don't know what the current promotion is. And then after that, you earn that every spend that you're doing while you're even spending the $4,000, depending on what you're purchasing, you're going to get 2x points, 1x points, or 1.5x, depending on what that credit card. So for Chase Sapphire, every travel dollar you spend, you get 2x the points. So if you spend $50 at a hotel, you get 100 points. If you buy a credit card, you buy an airline ticket for $500, you're going to get 2x the points. You get 2x 500. If you pay with your Chase Sapphire online grocery, I think it's 3x the points for online grocery. So these points get accumulated as you're spending and they get deposited into your account as you pay off your statements. So if you pay the monthly statement when it's due, the points get deposited. So let's just say you got the 90K or 80K signup bonus and you spent $4,000 and everything you bought was at 2X. So you actually made 2X of whatever you spent. So you have 94,000 points. So the value of those points at Chase and how Chase values it is that each point is like a cent to a 1.5 cents. That's how they see it. So that's not a lot, right? Like a cent for 90,000 points. You would probably think, well, isn't cashback better? Like I could get money back. I could get $900 back, or I could get, I could have done. So the value in points is only there if you know how to utilize those points. And this is the part that for me was also challenging, because I actually have had a Chase credit card point earning point card for like 5 years, and I accumulated a lot of points, but I never touched it because I didn't know what to do with it. Because every time I looked at the Chase portal, I was like, these points are ridiculous. I'm not spending all these points for something minuscule. And I didn't really know. It was just in the last couple of years I've realized, or I've learned, and I've taken courses to explain that, you know, those points have much more higher value if you move it out of the bank. So for example, Chase has different transfer partners. So if you go to your online account and you click transfer, you can actually move those 90,000 points to different hotels and different airlines. So that's where the value comes in. So every airline has their own miles, or they have what's called frequent flyer miles number that you can do, that you earn miles every time you travel on their flights. But you can also transfer credit card points to their frequent flyer account, and those points become miles. And then you can use those miles to book travel. So let's look at American Express. American Express Platinum is a great travel card. It's not the best card for earning points, in my opinion, but it's a great card for travel. It gives you, one, access to lounges, Priority Pass lounges, and Centurion, which is a American Express lounge. So why have that card? If you're someone who has a lot of trips during the year, when you go to the airport with your kids, you want to be able to go somewhere where you can feed them. You can like let them get some drinks, hang out. If you're going alone and you want to rest, that's a great opportunity with lounges. It lets you not sit by the gate, lets you go to a private lounge. So that elevates your travel. American Express also has, like Chase, has lots of great transfer partners. And they sometimes have the same transfer partners. So you can actually take the points from American Express, the points from Chase, and transfer it to the same frequent flyer account. So you can combine the points. So let's just say you only have 90,000 points on your Chase account and you have 90,000 points on your Amex account, but your tickets are like 120,000 points. You can then send some points from one and the other, combine it in one account. So if you want me to expand further, I can tell you, like, for example, the more common, you know, for getting the best value, it's a lot of times it's international flights. So Flying Blue, I don't know if you're familiar with Flying Blue. Flying Blue. It's a frequent flyer program for KLM and Air France. So if you have American Express points and Chase points and you're trying to book a ticket to Paris and you want to go business class, if you want to go business class on Air France, we can Google to see what the cost would be, but usually it's around $3,000 to $4,000 for a ticket. That could be a little lower if it's low season and a little higher if it's high season, and depending on what city you're leaving from. If you want to transfer and use your miles or your points, the best points that I saw recently was, I think, 56,000 points from IED, which is Dulles Airport, to Paris for a business class. So 56,000 points, the value that Chase says is what, like a cent? So if you did cash back for 56,000 points, you get like $560 back, which is nothing, right? If you transferred it to Air France through Flying Blue, you can book one business class ticket that's worth $4,000. So that 56,000 points just became a $4,000 ticket. So that's why people find value in it, because if you're already having lots of expenses during the year, like paying taxes, real estate taxes, or just school tuition, groceries, phone bills, television, things you were already paying. So you're not going out of your way to splurge on a million things to make these points. These are everyday things that you would have spent money on. If you figure out the best way to earn the most amount of points, depending on which cards you've opened and which cards give you the most amount of points for certain categories, you can in a year make a million points very easily.
Wow.
And then you can actually, if you're someone who only does once a year travel for international, and you, hey, you have kids and you're like, I don't want to go on a 10-hour flight or 12-hour flight in economy. I don't want to pay for business. I mean, I don't want to ever pay for $4,000 per person for a family of six is ridiculous. It's a $24,000 trip right there just for flights. Who's going to do that? You know, not many people can afford it, and not many people want to spend that much money. But many of us want to experience that kind of level of luxury when we're traveling, especially if it's an important trip. So you can easily do points because you can accumulate over the year and book something out for the following year for different flights. So that's how points work.
Okay. A lot of credit cards also have fees for using them, right? So is there a way to avoid those fees? I've seen like PayPal being mentioned if you hook up through PayPal or something.
So I'm not familiar about the PayPal hook. So credit cards, depending on which travel card you get or which credit card you're getting, may or may not have fees. So they'll let you know beforehand. So some of the highest fees are American Express Platinum, I believe is like $695 annual fee. It's unavoidable. And I think the same thing for the American Business Express card also is around $695. Chase Sapphire is like $95. Chase Sapphire Reserved is like maybe $500 something. And don't quote me on that. I don't actually have a CSR card, so I don't know exactly what the fee is for that. So these fees, you have to definitely look at them, right? Because if the card's not worth it to you, if it's not going to give you what you want, then it's useless. So I do have an American Business Platinum card and I have an American Express Platinum personal card. So I have both of them. So they have really large fees. How I justify it for myself in my mind is the Platinum cards, both of them give me certain benefits that have monetary amount. For example, the Platinum card that's personal, it gives me $100 in credit if I buy something at Saks. It gives me $200 in airline credits. So that's right there, $300. It gives me Clear, which is a travel thing at an airport where if you sign up for Clear, you're able to cut the line to go in the front of the line when you're going through security. That I would never pay for on my own. Like I would have never gotten unless it was a benefit from my card. It gives you $100 in global entry. So where are we at? Like 200,
so it's already paid back a lot.
Yeah. So, and there's a couple other things. It gives you Uber monthly credit of like $25. And so I don't use it for Uber to travel because we don't really use Uber in our daily lives as we're traveling, but we use it for Uber Eats. So every month we put the money in our Uber account and just do Uber Eats pickup. So that $25 just, you know, goes into it and get a meal out of it. So there's so many different credits that at the end of the day, I'm maybe paying $50 for a card that is also letting me have Priority Pass lounge access, which is like a $200-$300 value in a year for when we're traveling. So the benefits really end up outweighing how much the fees are. And that's what you have to look at. So if you look at a card that has a really high fee, you have to see what credits you get back. Will you be able to actually utilize those credits? Are they beneficial to you? And if they are, most of the time, the credit card companies make it so those high fees end up not being much once you use all their credits. For example, they also have different types of promotions. So recently, and this one just fortunately expired June 7th, I think, American Express Gold, which is my favorite card. I love that credit card. It's like my everyday card. This is the card I tell my husband to use because like my husband doesn't always remember what card gets you what, but the one thing he knows is if you're going to the grocery store and you're going to a restaurant, you always use the Gold card. It gives you 4x the points at grocery stores and 4x the points at restaurants. So it's a really high point value for everyday spend without having to think about it. The card fee is $250 a year. The benefits on this card are you get, I believe, a $10 dining credit every month to use at Cheesecake Factory, Grubhub, Goldbelly, Shake Shack, and I think a couple other places. We usually use it for Grubhub and we do the same thing like Uber Eats, just do the pickup. So we get the $10 and it gives you, I think, a $15 or $10 Uber credit, just like the other one. But recently, Amex had a promotion that if you did sign up for their card, you got a $200 credit back. So in the first year, you get $200 back. So that $250 is just down to $50. And then you have all these other credits every month that pretty much pays for your fee, your annual fee for that first year. And then after the first year, I mean, depending on whether you found value in the card, you can always decide to cancel the card. We usually recommend not doing that just because you're going to ruin a relationship with the bank. But if it really wasn't worthwhile to you, you can always cancel it. But a better option sometimes is at the end of the year when you're coming to when your annual fee might be due and you're thinking about whether I need to renew or not. A lot of times if you contact the bank and you say, hey, I never really used my Amex Platinum. I didn't find any value in it. The fee is really high. They may offer you an incentive to keep the card for the following year. For example, they might give you another bonus. Like if you spend $2,000, you'll get 30,000 points. Or they might waive the annual fee for the year. So there's different ways to keep the card, but there's no cards that have fees. There's no way around it. It's just finding what benefits that card gives you that makes up for that fee the best way possible.
Okay. And do these points ever expire? Or if you're canceling, let's say you're canceling, do you lose
Well,
those
if
points?
You're going to cancel the card, you better move those points to another, you know, an account either for an airline or a hotel, because you don't want the bank to claw it or have it disappear. Your points that are not being used that are in your bank, they don't go away. So that's why when I had my Chase cards that I was just accumulating, you know, I had so many points and I didn't know what to do with it. They didn't expire. I just would look at it and be like, I don't know. I don't want to use it, because you get so attached to the number. You're like, it's such a high number. I don't want to make it disappear. I had to go through a little, my own little coaching in my mind to be like, you got to earn it and burn it. I went through a phase where I was just hoarding points because I just felt like I'm working so hard for these points. If I spend it, they go away. And the thing is, points get devalued by airlines and hotels all the time. So it's best as you earn them, book your trips, enjoy it, because these things may not last. We don't know what the points value is going to be next year. It's all a you know, flux. There were better point values in people who traveled like this 10, 15 years ago compared to what it is now. So just use your points. But the points don't expire in your bank. So whatever's in your American Express, whatever's in your Chase is going to be there. However, when you move your points to a transfer partner, such as an airline, like if you Chase can go to United, Chase can go to Southwest, Chase can go to many international like Air France, KLM. It cannot go to Delta. Delta is only tied with American Express. So sometimes you have to look at which banks only transfer to which airlines or which hotels. When you move it, it can never be moved back to your bank. It is stuck. Mm. So you have to be very cautious.
You have to use it with that airline.
Yeah. And you have to know you're never just transfer for the fun of it. You have to have a trip you're going to book. What I always recommend to clients is that when you are about to, you find a flight that's good, call the airline. Confirm it's a real flight. The award space is really available. And then see if they can do a courtesy hold for 24 hours or 72 hours. I know Air France definitely does do 72 hour. Virgin Atlantic also does a courtesy hold for 72 hours. So some airlines do and some airlines don't. Because that way, sometimes transferring from your bank to your frequent flyer can be instant in a couple of minutes. I've seen it be 2 minutes, 3 minutes, within 2 hours, 3 hours. Sometimes it can take 2 to 3 days and that flight can disappear and then your points are kind of stuck. So it is a risk. So you have to be mindful. And when you do transfer it, that account that you transferred it to, if you're not using it right away, each airline, each hotel has its own expiration. And I don't know the expirations for every, but I know for Air France, they last about 2 years. So you should book a trip within 2 years from transfer. But if you book something and then you unbook, it gets refreshed. So you can always book with points a trip and then cancel that trip. It's not like money. It just
gets, you get like the same amount of points back.
Yeah. So a lot of people play that game too, where they're like, oh, it's almost 2 years. Let me book something and then let me cancel it or, you know, change it. And then I get the points back. But these are very detailed things. Not everyone, you know, and I think the hardest part, point earning is very easy. Anyone can figure out, okay, this card gives me 2X, 1X, 3X. This is what I'm going to do. I have to, you know. The hardest part about the points game is finding a good redemption, finding the award. That takes a lot of time. And that's where I come in with what I plan to do with a lot of my clients is I don't get a commission, of course, if you're booking with miles. But my thought is for a lot of my clients is that if you're going to book a really expensive cruise with me, I want you to have the best experience. There are ways to earn points on your cruise. I'm going to help you when we're discussing where you want to go, what you want to do. You may not be able to use your points for that cruise unless it's a Virgin Atlantic points. Virgin Atlantic has a Virgin cruise and you can use points to book that, but other cruise lines don't. But it's a really great opportunity to earn a lot of points. So I will help maximize your earnings. Like I will talk to you about, hey, what credit cards do you have? Have you thought about opening a credit card? Do you want to? This is what you could do. If you have credit cards, let's figure out the best way to earn the most amount of points. And if you're booking with cash on something, let's get you to your destination on a plane with using points. If you're purchasing flights, let's get you a hotel stay before cruise on points. If you're going to be staying at a resort, but you want your flights to be on miles, we can use points for different things. And it may not be that our whole trip is going to be on all points, but it could be different aspects of a trip that decreases your cost because travel is really expensive right now. So if there's any way that you can decrease some of the costs in certain areas, then that's still a plus that allows you to have money for other things on your trip or just savings.
Are there top hotels to look at or top airlines to look at for points?
So it depends on where you're trying to travel. I think for me personally, when I'm looking at Europe, my favorite airlines to look at is going to be Air France and KLM because I think they have really good points value. I personally look at business class most of the time just because the redemption value is just higher when you're looking at, but you can get great deals. So I'm planning a trip for next summer. With award travel, you have to look 10 months to 11 months before your travel date, which makes it really challenging for some families. But like with my husband and I, it actually works out great because we're both physicians and we really have to decide our vacation times at least 6 months to 8 months advance, just because you have to, you know, there's so many rules depending on where you work. So for us, it's like, okay, well, we just have to look at where we're trying to go. And I was actually just looking at flights from Zurich back to IED June of next year. That's economy. So it wasn't business class. And there's nothing wrong. You don't have to do business class. A lot of people, there's two things, right? Some people are like, I do one big trip. I'm going to go business class. I'm going to put all my points in it. And other people are like, I like to travel 2-3 times a year. That one business class ticket can get me multiple tickets for multiple trips and everything, whatever gives you joy, right? Whatever makes you happy, whatever works for you. 17,000 points for one economy ticket. That's amazing. You're just spending 17,000 points to get from Switzerland back home here. So for someone who's looking at trips and they're like, you know, that trip, that cost value of that flight, I didn't look at, but it was probably like $1,000. You know, it was in the summer, so it's peak season. Right. And so if you're a family of $5,000 in tickets is a lot of money. Whereas if you have like 200,000-300,000 points, you can use 50,000 to 100,000 points and you got your plane tickets. So I think getting to Europe, I would say that that's the best way to look at points. And the best thing about traveling to Europe is you really don't even need to get to the country you want to get to. You can fly to any country that has the best points because traveling in Europe is very cheap. You can get really cheap airlines, like for $50 to $100, $200, $300.
Trains, buses.
Yeah, just drive, rent a car. Like it's just very easy. So that's where a travel agent comes in, right? So if you're like, look, I can get my miles and then get these points, but I'm trying to get here. What do you think is the best? And depending on who you're talking to, if someone has already traveled to Europe before, have done those types of trips, they're going to be like, look, this works. This doesn't work. And they're going to do the research for you. So they're going to take that burden off of you to look up things. And for hotels, I am a Hyatt person. I never thought I'd be a Hyatt person, but I realized that Hyatt has the best points redemption value. You can compare a Hyatt and a Hilton and a Marriott and same comparable hotels. A night at a Hyatt at a very good resort might be $40,000 a night. That same comparable resort in the same location at a Hilton or a Marriott might be $100,000. So you just get so much better value, in my opinion, with Hyatt. So I personally like staying at Hyatts when it comes to if I'm using points. But there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, there's a lot of cards out there that gives you a lot of points, both Hilton cards and Marriott cards, Bonvoy. So, I mean, you just got to see what your family likes and how you travel and where you're going and which properties are available to kind of make those decisions. But I love Hyatts. And I tell everyone who's like trying to save money, like, hey, look up a Hyatt and see if there's one in that area and book via points and that will save you money.
Oh my God, I learned so much. Another thing, like, do you need to keep opening a lot of credit cards? So I generally freeze my credit because, you know, there's so much identity theft going on these days. Yeah. I always keep it frozen. Does one need to keep it open and keep getting new cards?
You just have to remember you froze it. And as long as you're a very organized person, so you know you freeze your, just before you sign up for a new credit card, you should unfreeze so that you can then be able to apply. Because if you have your account frozen and you apply, you're going to get a denial or we're in process. And then you have to call the bank and the bank will tell you, well, we couldn't look. And then, you know, it just adds a few extra days, which is fine. So if you are about to just unfreeze and then refreeze after you got approved. So the question about how many credit cards do you need to open? And the question is, what is your goal? It really ends up being, what is your goal? I don't open a lot of credit cards. I maximize when I open a credit card, but I personally don't, just because the way I view my credit card journey is I determined, and that's partly because I'm such a planner, what my travel goals are for the next year or 2 years. And based off those travel goals, I realize what I need to open and what I don't need to open to meet those needs. So just like anything else, something shiny isn't always worth getting. So you're going to see a lot of cards that are like, get a 150,000 signup bonus, open this credit card for this airline. Well, those points are only going to be used in that airline. So do you travel in that airline only? Do you think that airline has really good points redemption? Those are questions you got to ask. I prefer opening usually when it's transferable points. So So like Chase, where you can transfer those points out, Amex, Capital One, all of these banks where you can utilize those points in different places. You're not stuck with just one. I prefer those types, unless I do have a Hyatt card and my daughter has to get ready for her graduation.
Yeah.
I'll let you go. Like, so what I was saying with the, so I personally, the only branded card I have is a Hyatt credit card. So, and it's not even mine. So I'm really, it's definitely easier when you have a husband that's on board or a partner or someone in your family that your P1 and P2 is what we say in the game, like just like, you know, a video game, player one, player two. So my P2 got a Hyatt business card and I really wanted one because we are going to have a lot of trips planned in the next year, this year and next year, that's going to involve a lot of Hyatts. And we wanted to earn a certain status level in Hyatts, which right now we're at Globalist, which is the highest level, which is going to help us on these trips. So for example, if you're Hyatt Globalist and you go to Hawaii and you're going to go to stay at Maui Hyatt Regency, which is a really great resort that we stayed at last year, not on points, but a lot of these resorts have resort fees that could be like $200 to $250 a night. If you're a Globalist and you're staying with points at these resorts, those fees are waived. A lot of times these resorts have, if you're a Globalist and you're staying on points, their valet fees are waived. So think about New York City or any big city when you have to pay like every night $60, $70 to park your car. So these savings kind of add up for us. Also, when you're Globalist at a Hyatt, you get a certain amount of credit for breakfast every morning. And some places that can be $200 to $300 of food. Yeah. If you're a family of six and you have to feed four kids and you're on vacation, getting that credit for breakfast, you know, so you're not having to look up a breakfast place or trying to get food or snacks. You can feed them at the hotel before you go out to do all your excursions or, you know, travel. Those are all benefits that I thought were really going to be adding value to our travel. So we did that. So a lot of it ends up being what you decide has to do with your own personal travel goals. And that's going to be different for every individual. If you're someone that's like, you know what? I don't really travel. I don't really go on international trips. I only actually travel Southwest. That's all I do. For you, I would say maybe open a Chase credit card because Chase points go to Southwest. Mm. And maybe open a Southwest card if you're a family of four at a certain point in time that I would explain to someone to get a companion pass. So Southwest has one of the best companion pass systems of all the airlines out there. Mm. So I know a lot of people poo-poo Southwest, but Southwest has a really great companion pass. I don't have one, but you pretty much, when you earn their companion pass, one person flies free, unlimited amount of times during the year with no fees attached to it. So if you're a family of, let's just say three and you have one kid and you get a companion, you're only paying for two people. If you're a family of two and you get a companion pass, you're only paying for one person. And you can just use points to pay for your own ticket. So technically you are ending up flying for free. So it just depends. Everyone has different goals. And based off each individual, if you talk to someone like me, they can sit down with you as a consult and kind of go over that with you and be like, what are you trying to end up doing? This would be the best path. And there's lots of online resources, but the terminology can get funny.
Yeah.
And people get lost in the weeds and a lot of stuff. So it's good to always talk to people.
Yeah. No, thank you so much. I learned so much today. Anything I missed? And then where can people find you? How can people find you? You follow your travels and get in touch with you if they want to book a trip.
So Instagram is probably the best way to message me when it comes, you know, to travel related. I do have an account that I use. It's actually my personal and business account because I only have one. It makes it just easier for me to be able to. So I can give you my handle, which can be used to, it's Dr. Moms Travel. And that's probably a good way to follow. I usually do stories. I don't post as much as I do stories, and I save different trips as my stories to allow people to kind of see where I've been and just kind of follow along. And then on Facebook, I do have a group that's called Traveling While Muslim. It's a private group for female Muslims only of any profession. It doesn't matter if you don't have to be a physician. It could be any, because my goal really is to help, you know, Muslim women become empowered and being able to figure out the best way they want to travel. And the group isn't meant to just sell you, hey, I'm a travel advisor, you should book with me. It's hopefully a group that can, you know, also just be like, I just went on this great trip. This is what I did. So people can kind of share advice. But what I'm planning on doing is having video series set up to kind of do what we just did and to explain to people how points work. So hopefully to help encourage people to kind of learn more about it and maybe utilize it in the next year or so.
That's awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I so appreciate this.
Thank you. Good luck at the graduation. I have to go a bunch of graduation too.
So I know. Have fun. I know. This is called really being a Dr. Mommy, right?
Yes.
We have 10 things to do today, but we fit in a podcast.
We got it done.
Exactly. In between, we're going to plan 5 trips, right?
Inshallah.
Inshallah. So good talking to you, Saima. Have a good rest of your day, inshallah.
You too.
All right, so let me go.
Bye.